study fails to single out the specific reason for such inequality, but cites the COVID-19 pandemic as a possible socioeconomic driving factor.
People having to seek their own interpretations of what's happening. We're seeing it like things like this shooting, and this is not the only shooting. There's other things that are happening where people are acting out, trying to figure out, you know, just acting out, reactionary, the most extreme reactionary responses to what's happening. And it can only get worse. As long as capitalism and white supremacy and patriarchy are the rule of the day in the United States, they can't address the fundamental human needs of people, then things like this will get worse. And then as the media glosses over it and doesn't want to tell people the truth, they can only get worse.
Tragic incidents like these are a grim reminder of the need for tighter gun control laws that would prevent easy access to firearms and reforms that would rid the U.S. society of racial and ethnic biases.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered on April 29, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Quds Day. In the first part of this speech, Imam Khamenei expressed his gratitude for the Iranian nation for their participation in Quds Day. You people of Palestine, you self-sacrificing youth in the West Bank and in the 1948 lands, you who are struggling for God in the Jenin refugee camp, and you, the residents in the Palestinian camps outside of Palestine, are important, sensitive parts and pioneers of the resistance. Greetings be upon you. Know that, verily, Allah will defend those who believe. This is verse of Quran, chapter 22, verse 38. But if you are patient, it will certainly be best for those who are patient. Chapter 16, verse 126. But if you preserve patiently and guard against evil, that will be a determining factor in all affairs. Chapter 3, verse 186. And peace unto you for that you preserved in patience.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Now, how excellent is the final abode? Chapter 13, verse 24. The Islamic Republic of Iran advocates and supports the camp of resistance. It advocates and supports the Palestinian resistance. We have always said this. We have always acted on this, and we have stood by it. We condemn the treacherous move to normalize relations with the Zionist regime. We condemn the policy of normalization of relations. Some Arab governments have asked the US to accelerate the matter of solving the Palestinian issue. If they mean that before the US leaves the region, it should remove any obstacle standing in the way of the Zionist regime, then first of all, they have behaved treacherously and have brought disgrace to the Arab world. Secondly, they have been naive, since this is a case of the blind leading the blind. At the end of my statements, I send my greetings upon the souls of the Palestinian martyrs. I send my regards to their patient families. I send my greetings to the Palestinians who have been taken captive and prisoner, but who resist with a firm determination. I squeeze the hands of our resistant Palestinian groups who have undertaken to carry out an important part of this great responsibility. And I call on the entire world of Islam, in particular the youth, to participate in this field that brings dignity and honor. And our concluding call will be, all praise belongs to Allah, the Lord of the worlds. Chapter 10, verse 10.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Limelight. Once NSO Group's Pegasus spyware is successfully deployed against a user, it can hack any phone, intercept messages and emails, view a user's photographs and location, and turn the mobile into a remote listening device, allowing an NSO customer to listen in on conversation held in proximity to the phone. We have prepared for you an article written by Stephanie Kirchgassner. The piece is titled Victim's iPhone Hacked by Pegasus Spyware Weeks After Apple Sued NSO. New evidence has revealed that an Apple iPhone was successfully hacked by a government user of NSO Group's Pegasus spyware in December, weeks after the technology giant sued the Israeli company in a US court of law and called for it to be banned from harming individuals using Apple products. A report published on Tuesday, 5th of April, by security researchers at Frontline Defenders and Citizen Lab at the University of Toronto found that phones belonging to four Jordanian human rights defenders, lawyers and journalists were hacked by government clients of NSO, which appear to be Jordanian government agencies, from August of 2019 to December of 2021. The news appears to show that Apple users could still be vulnerable to surveillance by NSO government clients, even after the company sued NSO last November. At the time, Apple said it was filing lawsuit against NSO and its parent company to hold them accountable for the surveillance and targeting of Apple users. It followed the identification of an exploit by Citizen Lab at the University of Toronto that allowed users of NSO to infect iPhones with the company's Pegasus spyware through a vulnerability in its iMessage function. Apple said at the time that the vulnerability had been patched. The report by Frontline Defenders and Citizen Lab said the fact that the targeting we uncovered happened after the widespread publicity around Apple's lawsuit and notifications to victims is especially remarkable. A firm that respected such concerns would have at least paused operations for government clients that have a widely publicized track record of human rights concerns. Jordan's National Center for Cybersecurity categorically denied the findings of the report. It told the Associated Press these allegations are baseless and Jordan has not cooperated with any agents with the aim of spying on citizens' phones or censoring their calls. An NSO spokesperson had no comment on the findings, but said that the monitoring of dissidents, activists and journalist activists by any client would amount to a severe misuse of its product. Once Pegasus is successfully deployed against the user, it can hack any phone, intercept messages and emails, view a user's photographs and location, and turn the mobile phone into a remote listening device, allowing an NSO customer to listen in on conversation held in proximity to the phone. NSO has said it investigates serious claims of abuse and that it does not know how its government clients use its spyware. It has claimed Pegasus is only meant to be used against serious criminals and terrorists. Apple did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The report by Frontline Defenders and Citizen Lab named three Jordanian citizens whose phones they said were hacked using Pegasus, including a human rights defender named Ahmad al-Naymat, who is currently in prison for a case related to protests at Al-Salt State Hospital, where lack of oxygen has killed several COVID-19 patients. The researchers found that human rights lawyer Malik Abu Arabi, who represents al-Naymat and other activists, was hacked at least 21 times between August of 2019 and July of 2021. A third target, Suhair Jaradat, is a human rights defender and journalist focused on women's issues in the media. The researchers found that Jaradat had been sent text messages and WhatsApp messages with links to Pegasus spyware. The researchers said the WhatsApp message impersonated a popular anti-government Twitter user in Jordan. The researchers' findings were peer-reviewed and confirmed by Amnesty International's Security Lab. The latest news comes as NSO appears to be locked in battle with the managers of Berkeley Research Group, a consultancy that took over management of the fund that owns NSO last year. Berkeley Research Group is engaged in litigation in London with the previous owners of the fund and claimed new details about its frayed relationship with NSO. A witness statement filed by Finbar O'Connor, the managing director of Berkeley Research Group in New York, said that cooperation from NSO's management has been virtually non-existent since it began managing the fund that owns the Israeli company. Finbar O'Connor also said that the Berkeley Research Group is still not in possession of information sufficient for it to understand historic actions by NSO that resulted in the Biden administration placing NSO on a Commerce Department blacklist. NSO did not respond to questions about Berkeley Research Group's claims. The charges raise questions about corporate oversight of the company's executive managers in the wake of last year's publication of the Pegasus Project, an investigation into NSO by Forbidden Stories, a journalistic collaboration that included The Guardian. The Pegasus Project reported dozens of cases of individuals who were hacked or targeted by NSO's government clients, including journalists, activists, and government officials. In Finbar O'Connor's witness statement, the Berkeley Research Group executive said that he understood that NSO is undertaking efforts to identify potential US-based investors early in 2021, but that the effort had been halted as a result of the Pegasus project, which he said negatively impacted investor interest. NSO did not respond to a request for comment in connection to that claim. The company separately faced a new lawsuit in France by a French-Palestinian human rights defender named Salah Hamouri, who, with the International Federation of Human Rights and the Human Rights League, is suing NSO for violating privacy rights in France. An investigation by Frontline Defenders published in November found that the mobile phones of Hamouri, whose Al-Quds residency status has been revoked, and five other Palestinian human rights defenders were hacked using Pegasus, NSO's signature spyware. Frontline Defenders' findings were independently confirmed with high confidence by technical experts at Citizen Lab and Amnesty International Security Lab, the world's leading authorities on such hacks. At the time, an NSO spokesperson said it could not confirm or deny the identity of government customers, but that it does not operate products itself and is not privy to the details of individuals monitored.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Economic Divide.
The U.S. dollar has been regarded as the world's number one currency, but it is being challenged like no other time in history. Not only is there a possibility of a new financial system that is being formed, more and more countries are opting to do their bilateral trade in their own currencies. One country, Brazil, is even considering forming a regional currency to break away from the dollar dependency. Welcome to Economic Divide. Some of the highlights of today's program First, a weakening U.S. dollar. A depreciation has taken place since 2020. Inflation also has occurred, which is pointing to a U.S. economic downturn. That will contribute to the U.S. dollar weakening. Next, we will take a look at new global monetary order. One of them, CBDC, digitized domestic currency. That's regulated by the central banks. And that, again, contributes to a move towards de-dollarizing. And another highlight of the program, a new currency. Brazil's Lula da Silva, future presidential candidate, wants a new regional LATAM currency to break away from the dollar. Will that work?
The U.S. dollar is continuing down its path of losing its appeal as the number one currency of choice. There are many countries who are working hard to de-dollarize, especially when it comes to bilateral trade. BRICS countries are one grouping of countries that have started down this path from a long time ago, especially countries like Russia and China. Certain SCO member countries, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, are also conducting bilateral trade in their own currency. This includes countries like Russia, China, India, and Iran. Some of the reasons are not to have the long arm of U.S. sanctions reach these countries. Russia is a case in point. The unprecedented U.S. sanctions against this country, with the aim of destroying its economy, is having devastating effects in different sectors. But more importantly, when the U.S. confiscated Russia's dollar currency in foreign banks, that was a nail in the coffin for the dollar. Other countries have taken note and are dumping the dollar for other currencies in case they do not oblige to U.S. foreign policy directives. And Russia's ruble gain in value is another example of how the U.S. dollar is losing its appeal. Given that Russia is backing that with gold and not printer ink like the dollar, it has surpassed in value against the dollar.
The U.S. monetary system using the dollar as a weapon is being threatened in its efficiency, and then the dollar standing in more ways than one. The U.S. insistence to keep this war going, for example, on Ukraine, doesn't help matters either for the U.S. These are what some people thought online about this and whether there is a new monetary system competing with the U.S. Our first post, recent U.S. government actions will lead investors to diversify away from U.S. markets. U.S. bonds will lose safe haven status and America's credibility will be lost. BRICS and others will buy OPEC's oil. Next up, a house of cards. The U.S.'s trade deficit is sustained by the dollar status as world reserve currency. Under normal circumstances, a country that does not produce real value collapses. When the dollar collapses, Americans will get squeezed harder. And then this post, sanctions are destroying the U.S. dollar's status as the world's top currency. Sanctions are destroying the dollar status because the continual use of sanctions to pressure countries and companies perceived to be acting against U.S. interests may also be weakening the dollar's global position. It goes on to say the convenience of simply prescribing sanctions as a one-size-fits-all is losing its effect and at the same time empowering the opposition. And in our final post, what people said, Lula hopes to see the creation of a Latin American currency in order to end the dollar dependency. Let me introduce our guest for this segment of the Q&A. We have Joe Emmers Berger, who's an author, freelance writer at fair.org, who joins us. Okay, welcome to the program, Joe Emmers Berger. Looking at how most economies are establishing different mechanisms to circumvent, for example, U.S. sanctions and also the hegemony of the U.S. dollar, these range from like using barter trade to trading in other currencies, of course, national currencies. And also, we're looking at the world moving towards multipolarity. Isn't it only a matter of time before the dollar, for example, loses its dominance when it comes to global currencies?
Yes, I think that's correct, but it's a question of how much time. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. I think it'll still take years. A lot will depend on what China does. For example, there's a rush, there's initiatives in China to develop more digital currency, more modernized banking system.
Let me introduce Cesar Locatelli, an economist and independent journalist who joins us. Cesar Locatelli, welcome to Economic Divide. The future Brazilian presidential candidate, Lula da Silva, has actually proposed move away from the dollar, or to have the dollar dominance to be decreased or lessened when it comes to not just Brazil but regional countries. And its introduction, he has introduced what's called a SOR. But it says regional countries can still use their currencies. What do you think about that when it comes to the introduction of a local currency in order to move away from the dollar? Because some countries are actually using their own currencies when it comes to bilateral trade.
Well, I'll say the same thing. It will help. We have to consider that in this case, I'm sorry for that.
Well, that's okay.
In this case, the roles the dollar plays as a medium of exchange in an international unit of value.
It's time now for the Info News section of the program. This is where we take a look at economic news from around the world. Well, our first topic takes us to the UK. Britons there are facing what's called a real food poverty. That is a warning that has been issued by a supermarket giant in that country. And that supermarket is Tesco, where Tesco's boss says people in the UK are actually struggling with the cost of living crisis. That comes, of course, on top of the inflation that that country is experiencing. And talk about inflation, let's go to the EU and see how inflation is doing cumulatively there for the bloc. The ninth EU country is actually seeing inflation jump to double digits. So you have nine countries in the 27-member bloc to experience inflation. Greece, in this case, has recorded its highest price increases in 28 years. So inflation is gripping the EU like many other parts of the world. Next up, limited energy supplies. Yes, that is a warning that has been issued by Saudi Arabia and the UAE, who have said that the world's dwindling energy supplies is what's occurring. They added that spare capacity is decreasing in all energy sectors, and this has happened in the wake of Russia's war on Ukraine. So when you have Saudi Arabia in particular issuing that kind of warning, first, to find out if that's true or not, if it is, very important. And secondly, we have to find out if there's actually politics involved in that warning. Finally, market sell-off. That's right. That is what has happened in this past week in the U.S. The S&P 500, the Dow Jones, suffering steep losses. Aside from those two major markets in the U.S., you also have the cryptocurrency market, which has lost more than half of its value. Now, as of the recording of this program, Bitcoin was actually below 30,000, which is roughly about half of its value. Okay, those were the stories that we found to be important in our view. If you have a story in your part of the world that you would like for us to cover in this program, please don't hesitate to drop us a line and tell us what that is. Contact information is on your screens now.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The world is moving towards a multipolar financial world. Some argue that it is here already. So is it or is it not? Can the U.S. financial system and the dollar survive it? That is what we'll be looking at closely in our in-depth section. Well, first things first. What is a multipolar financial system anyways? Well, in short, it is a system which will have a monumental occurrence. It will cause what's called de-dollarization. Basically, a multipolar financial system will arise due to a shock in the U.S. that causes a migration away from its currency. Next, for the U.S. dollar to actually lose its standing, it is widely believed that one of the major factors that will lead to that outcome will come from within the U.S., like the U.S. debt. Now, the U.S. debt ceiling comes into focus here, is the maximum amount of money that the United States can borrow by issuing bonds. But what if the figure was this? I mean, it's even hard to decipher what we're looking at here. $30 trillion as of when we're speaking is what this figure is. It's actually $30 trillion plus, $448 million to add to that, and counting. Although the cap on public borrowing has always been lifted just in time to avert a default, the failure of the U.S. to pay its debt would dent its attractiveness as a reserve asset. So that is something that many central banks are actually looking at. Well, taking a look at another factor that points to a break from the dollar are how countries are actually shedding the dollar from the reserves and opting to go for gold. Now, central banks around the world are increasing the gold that they are holding in foreign exchange reserves. This is a snapshot of that. Kazakhstan, Turkey, Russia, of note because of the war that's going on. And then moving down, China is also another country to be looking at in terms of their gold reserves. This actually has brought the total to a 31-year high for the year 2021 in terms of the countries holding the gold reserves. Now, the value of the dollar against gold has dropped sharply over the last decade, and this reflects global concerns about the dollar-based monetary regime. It is worth noting the amount of gold reserves which exist underground. And here is the current supply. What countries actually have that amount? Well, coming in first is Australia at 19% of the world in terms of having the most, 10,000 tons. Again, of note, Russia, which has 7,500 tons. Then U.S., Peru, and then the rest of the world coming in at 51%. Now, when you take a look at Russia, it holds the second most gold reserves, more than double that of the U.S., coming in a short second behind Australia, which poses two questions. How can the U.S. think it can break Russia economically? And two, Russia can surely give the dollar a run for the money since, for example, the ruble is backed by gold, unlike the dollar. Well, since we have mentioned the currency, the ruble, then let's talk about the reserve currencies of central banks. They are more than ever before looking to diversify away from the dollar. And here is just a snapshot of some of the currencies around the world, such as the pound, or you're looking at the euro, or even the yen. And, of course, this is meant for the central banks to have a more diverse set of assets to move away from the amount of dollars they use. And it's especially true for emerging markets, where much of the demand for reserve assets is going to come from, which means more euros, renminbis, and maybe even stablecoins, which will be held alongside what many say is still a popular U.S. dollar. All right, next up, the next order of the day is something that's rattled financial markets and is set to be the defining moment. And we're looking at a decentralized finance. Stablecoins as a reserve currency is one of the features. And basically, that means that there are no controls by central banks. And that means that they cannot see where money is coming from in the form of digital currencies. Of course, some of the popular ones are cryptocurrencies. They are the ones that have contributed to its popularity. Next up, CBDCs, their central bank digital currency. And in this case in point, these are ones that are issued by the central banks. Now, the digital yuan helped China internationalize this currency, and that is something that's very important for the yuan. Next up, the Latin American currency, the SUR, is something that the future presidential candidate, Lula da Silva, has actually proposed. And basically, the ultimate goal is to decrease the dependence on the U.S. dollar. That is something that Lula da Silva is proposing, because this way the U.S. will not have control over the country overall in terms of the politics that's involved. And of course, the U.S. will then not be able to use the dollar, as some say, as a weapon. Okay, let's get some analysis into the picture. Let me bring in our guest, Joe Emmersberger, who's an author, freelance writer at fair.org. who rejoins us. Joe, welcome back. So when we take a look at the proposal that the future Brazilian candidate, Lula da Silva, has said, and that is for the country, in particular Brazil, to be free from the dollar, and then the regional countries by proposing this regional currency. Do you think it's going to work? I mean, this is, in terms of bilateral trade, he says the countries can keep their own currencies. But overall, what do you think about that scheme? Because countries already are using their own currencies in bilateral trade, like Iran, India, or Russia and China.
Well, all those are very positive initiatives. But I think the key thing to keep in mind is that the U.S. dollar is so dominant that it'll still take years for that to really make an appreciable a dent in the U.S. financial dominance. It's going in the right direction, but it's not like it's going to happen tomorrow. This is something that hopefully the countries that were under U.S. attack will not lose momentum and will not get in any way complacent about circumventing the U.S. financial system and broadening all these initiatives you talk about. But it's huge. A huge factor here is what China does.
Yeah, indeed. We're going to be looking out for that. Well, let's bring back Cesar Lucatelli, economist and independent journalist, who rejoins us. Welcome back, Cesar. Saudi Arabia had announced earlier that it is actually shedding some of its dollars, and it actually is going to sell some of its oil to China by pegging the oil sales to the yuan. What do you think about that? I mean, doesn't that, in essence, actually make the dollar lose its standing by changing its currency to the yuan?
The transactions being made in another currency other than the dollar will help debilitate the dollar. On the other hand, it seems, I don't know if I'm correct, but this change will follow the new geopolitical status of the world.
Brazil's former president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, has launched his presidential candidacy for this October's election, calling for unity around democracy. He's also vowed to fix the country's economy hit hard by the coronavirus pandemic. In this regard, Lula has proposed creating a Latin American currency in order to combat the dependency on the dollar. Lula da Silva has proposed expanding Latin American economic integration through the creation of a common regional currency. He says Latin American countries should use a unified regional currency. He revealed that the currency would be called the Sur, which means south in Spanish. Lula explained that countries in Latin America could still keep their sovereign domestic currency, but they could use the Sur to do bilateral trade with each other instead of having to exchange for U.S. dollars. The Sur could also help to contain inflation in the region. Lula said the goal of the currency would be to deepen Latin American integration and to strengthen the region's economic sovereignty, weakening its dependence on the U.S. Lula has also vowed to revive the BRICS system, integrating Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa in an independent economic architecture in order to challenge the Western financial hegemony. Five countries represent 41% of the global population, 24% of the global gross domestic product, and 16% of the global trade. Lula, who led Brazil through an economic boom from 2003 to 2010, has been in unofficial campaign mode since March of last year. He left office 12 years ago with approval ratings of 87% after presiding over a golden period that lifted some 30 million Brazilians out of poverty.
When it comes to the dollar, there are many factors that contribute to its strong standing, and the one that stands out the most is how oil is pegged to the dollar. Most oil exporting nations own their oil industries. That makes their national income dependent on the dollar's value. If it falls, so does their government's revenue. As a result, most of these oil exporters have pegged their currencies to the dollar. Now, we know that the relationship between Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and the US is on the rocks since both, as a part of OPEC, did not comply with Washington's demands to boost production. Well, things have actually turned for the worse. After getting snubbed by the UAE and Saudi Arabia and OPEC, the US is heading back. The US Senate committee has passed an antitrust bill pressuring OPEC. This bill could open OPEC and partners to lawsuits for collusion or boosting crude oil prices. That is because before, OPEC countries had immunity that protected them and its national oil companies from lawsuits. U.S. lawmakers say that NOPEC is intended to protect U.S. consumers and businesses from engineered spikes in the cost of gasoline, something which the U.S. is accusing OPEC member countries of doing, although it's not saying that to them directly. As was expected, OPEC did not take this sitting down and has hit back, which could put a further strain on the U.S. and, in turn, gasoline prices. The UAE energy minister issued a warning to the U.S. that the NOPEC bill could disrupt the industry's long-standing system of production and increase prices by 300% or even higher. Sohail Al-Mazrui said OPEC is being unfairly targeted, adding, "If you hinder the system, you need to watch what you're asking for, because having a chaotic market, you would see a 200% or 300% increase in the prices that the world cannot handle." Here's how OPEC stands on the issue of boosting production on March 30th, before the war between Russia and Ukraine started, from the mouth of the Saudi oil minister.
"I would take that privilege of saying I've been at it for the last 35 years, and I know how we managed to compartmentalize our political differences from what is good for the common good, or the common good of all of us."
Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, they try to remain neutral. They try to remain in the gray area between those who impose sanctions on Russia and, of course, the other side is Russia. However, that also has many economic reasons behind it. I don't think OPEC producers, they want to seem allies of the United States when it comes to how much oil they produce.
All of this is, of course, bad news for the U.S., which is experiencing record oil prices. And with the war on Russia showing no signs of it ending anytime soon, oil production will not be increased the way the U.S. wants.
Europe's reliance on Russian energy is so high that you cannot easily wean off of it without having a significant economic impact in the region.
Why does this matter? Because the country that the U.S. made a deal to peg oil to the dollar, Saudi Arabia, is in active talks with Beijing to price some of its oil sales to China in the yuan. The talks have actually accelerated as the Saudi unhappiness has grown with Washington, surely to grow even more due to the NOPEC bill that was passed. This would dent the U.S. dollar's dominance of the global petroleum market and mark another shift by the world's top crude exporter toward Asia. That does it for my section. Hope it was informative for you.
In this program, we have outlined for you all the ways that the U.S. monetary system is being squeezed or challenged, I should say, including the dollar. Now, there's no doubt that countries are tired, in some sense, of their dependency on the dollar. For example, when it comes to the fact that the U.S. may exercise sanctions against them if they don't bend politically for the U.S. But all eyes are on China, then oil-producing countries, if they are going to accelerate their plans for pegging the oil sales to the yuan, for example. Saudi Arabia has done a portion of its sales that way. Add to that the multipolar financial system, which includes digital currencies. Well, the U.S. then has a lot to worry about, especially vis-a-vis the dollar. That does for this edition of the program. Hope you enjoyed it. From Mika Vitavoy and the entire team, it's goodbye until next time.
From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, close up, Iran.
Hello. I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Well, let me check the map. This is the map of Iran. You know, I still stick to these paper maps and have no interest in the digital maps. This map is a gift from my father. I've been keeping it for a long time. I've marked all the points I visited. Now, another mark. A new mark. Basht County. Found it. Here it is. A circle around the location. Guess what? Tomorrow I'm going to visit a spectacular ancient Iranian monument. Dogur Dopa. Dogur Dopa is an ancient monument located in Basht County in Kohgiloye and Boyerahmad province. This monument was registered in Iran's National Heritage List in 2001. Basht is also one of the historical and ancient cities of Iran. This city dates back to Elami period. Elam was an ancient civilization centered in southwest of Iranian plateau at the end of the 3rd millennium BC. Basht County has a mild weather. People of this city are mostly active in the fields of agriculture, gardening, and animal husbandry. Dogur Dopa are two stone columns made of milky white limestone, which are deliberately carved. These columns were used as mil, or guide tower, which was a kind of a structure with fire on them so that the travelers could find their way. Some archaeologists believe that these columns date back to the Sasanid era. This morning, I arrived at Basht County. And right now, I am in a very beautiful plain. Here's full of anemone flowers as well as oregano. Further away, there is a hill where on its top, the stone columns of Dogur Dopa are situated. Well, I have to take a walk in order to reach these historical structures. And what's more enjoyable than hiking in a green, beautiful plain? Just a few meters left to top of that hill. I can see the columns. Yeah, visible. Oh God, look at this. Two milky white columns next to each other, exactly next to each other. they are integrated and have bulges on their top. In order to have a clear image of these two columns, just imagine two nails with the height of 2 meters. The distance between the two columns is 0.5 meter. One of the columns is a little bit shorter than the other one. One of the locals told me that these two columns were used as a guide for travelers even in 50 years ago. Further away from the columns of Dogur Dopa, there are orange gardens. These gardens have doubled the beauty of these ancient structures. Let me get seated beneath these orange trees and look at the spectacular monuments of Iran from this point of view. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
A new list released by British Daily, The Sunday Times, says there are a record number of billionaires in the UK, with the richest 250 people worth more than £500 billion. Released in the middle of a soaring cost of living crisis, this year's list has new entrants, among them a UK government minister and his wife.
The UK, home to some of the richest people on the planet. The capital, London, alone has more billionaires than any other city in the world. That's all according to UK Daily, The Sunday Times' rich list. In this country, it says, 250 people now own a combined $886 billion, enough to lift millions out of extreme poverty several times over.
It clearly shows that the capitalist system is not working. And obviously, we are celebrating that there are so many more millionaires who have more than doubled or tripled their wealth in the last 2 years, while the poor have become really even poorer.
Many of the names on the list have been there for years. This year, though, two new faces. Chancellor Rishi Sunak, the man in charge of helping millions of struggling British families through the spiraling cost of living crisis, and his wife.
Evidently, someone of his wealth has no understanding of the crisis that a majority of the people are facing. We have 4 million people going to food banks, and the the crisis, the cost of living crisis, is becoming very significant. By the end of the year, the ordinary people, the poorer sections of the community, may be even in more difficulty, while Mr. Rishi Sunak is laughing all the way to the bank.
The bulk of Rishi Sunak's wealth stems from his wife, the daughter of an Indian IT mogul. He also made his fortune working for Goldman Sachs and as a hedge fund manager in the past. We wanted to know how Britons felt about their chancellor now being one of the 250 wealthiest people in the country amidst the cost of living crisis that's pushing millions of people into poverty.
I believe it's not fair, particularly the way we found out, suddenly, out of the blue.
I don't feel particular resentment at people who have money, as long as they do their job and do their job well. No one would have known had not it been highlighted recently.
First published in 1989, the Sunday Times Rich List bears the names of 1,000 ultra-rich people or families resident in the United Kingdom. 90% of those on the list are usually men.
At a time of record inflation, when many are struggling with energy bills, petrol prices and food costs, this golden era for the UK's super rich, among them now a government official, does not seem to be coming to an end. Saeed Purizep, London.
U.S. President Joe Biden met South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol for summit talks in Seoul Saturday. The conservative Yoon seeks to strengthen the U.S.-South Korea alliance. Biden's remarks perhaps fell short of the strategic nuclear umbrella the hawkish Yoon seeks, while offering some reassurance regarding North Korea's missile and nuclear programs.
Today, President Yoon and I committed to strengthening our close engagement and work together to take on challenges of regional security, including addressing the threat posed by the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, by further strengthening our deterrence posture and working toward a complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
Several demonstrations took place throughout the day outside the summit venue. Peace activists worry Yoon's hasty actions to embrace Washington endanger regional peace and security.
Strengthening the U.S.-South Korea alliance will likely cause a backlash from North Korea, China, and Russia, and destabilize the security of South Korea. If we jump on the U.S. strategy too easily, will this really protect the economy and security of South Korea?
Presidents Yoon and Biden also toured a Samsung Electronics factory. Biden plans to launch the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework in Tokyo next week as the U.S. implements the new trade grouping largely aimed at containing China. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol is just 10 days into his five-year term in office. Through this summit with U.S. President Joe Biden, Seoul has now strongly pivoted to a more pro-American foreign policy. The question then is how U.S. adversaries in the region, China and North Korea, will react. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Outrage has spread across the pro-Palestine community this week after British Home Secretary Priti Patel branded the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement racist and anti-Semitic. The controversial comments were issued on Monday at a Conservative Friends of Israel lobby group event.
The BDS movement, everything we have seen around the BDS movement is racist. The anti-Semitic troops, the cartoons, the chants.
Founded in 2005, the BDS movement is a Palestinian-led campaign promoting boycott and economic sanctions against Israel. After a notable rise in popularity and success in recent years, the British establishment has acted to essentially criminalise the practice. In response to Patel's comments, onlookers have pointed out her own policies and praise of Israel's ambassador as blatant hypocrisy.
The hypocrisy of Priti Patel calling anyone or anything racist on one hand, whilst openly gushing for Tzipi Hotovli on the other. I mean, Tzipi is an out-and-out anti-Arab racist. She thinks that Jews and Arabs should have no relationships at all. She also thinks that the Nakba, the expulsion of 700,000 Palestinians at the birth of Israel, she thinks that was a myth. Secondly, Priti Patel herself, her comments against Black Lives Matter, against English footballers who took the knee against in solidarity against racism, and also the laws that she's brought into place, like the Nationality and Borders Act. These comments, these laws, they've further, deeper, structuralised racism into British society.